The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. Jesus said to his apostles, "Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever does not take up his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. Whoever receives you receives me, and whoever receives me receives the one who sent me. Whoever receives a prophet because he is a prophet will receive a prophet's reward, and whoever receives a righteous man because he is a righteous man will receive a righteous man's reward. And whoever gives only a cup of cold water to one of these little ones to drink, because the little one is a disciple, amen, I say to you, he will surely not lose his reward." The Gospel of the Lord. Everybody knows that our church was founded on 12 apostles. Everybody knows that's how this whole church got started. But do you know how quickly the church grew once it got started? Now listen to this. They estimate that by the time of the death of the last apostle, there were about 6,000 Christians in the world, give or take, right? Somewhere between 5,000 and 7,000 Christians in the entire world. Now, understand, that's about the size of a small to mid-sized suburban parish, and it's all the Christians in the world. By the time Christianity was made legal, with the Edict of Milan, more than half the population of the entire Roman Empire professed the Christian faith, whether open or in hiding. More than half the people. That is astonishing growth. And what's most impressive about it is the reason why the faith spread so fast. It wasn't because of political pressure, economic pressure. Nobody was forced to convert to the Christian faith at the point of a sword. But you go back to the historical record and you look, and without exception, you'll discover the reason the faith spread as quickly as it did was because of the consistent witness of the lives of the ancient Christian saints. You know, the priest gets up here and he says Mass. And you ever heard the priest read all those saints' names when he says Mass? And he says Linus, Cletus, Clement, Sixtus, Cornelius, and Felicity and Perpetua, Agatha, Lucy, Agnes, Cecilia, Anastasia. You know, he reads all those saints' names. You ever wondered who those people are? You should look them up. They are astonishing stories, each one giving a reason why this faith spread as quickly as it did. I'll tell you a couple of them. I'll tell you about St. Agnes, 12-year-old girl who was threatened with decapitation at the point of an axe if she did not bow down and worship the Emperor of Rome. She flat out refused. She says, "I worship Christ alone." And as they led her up to the executioner's block, she was so tranquil, serene, and composed that all the people were astonished. They had never seen anyone go down to death with such spiritual composure, much less a 12-year-old girl. And they began to ask themselves, what is this Christian faith? What do they believe? What is it that makes them so brave in the face of such horrors? They say that the day that the axe blade struck the neck of St. Agnes, the only one who was trembling was the executioner at the spiritual power evident in this very small girl. I'll tell you about Perpetua and Felicity. I know a lot more about Perpetua than I know about Felicity, but theirs is one of the best documented martyrdoms in the entire ancient church. Perpetua was a Roman noblewoman, 22 years old. When they discovered that she worshipped Jesus Christ and not the Emperor of Rome, they decided to make an example of her. And they orchestrated the death with which to send a message that you must not approach this Christian faith or else this will happen to you. They took Perpetua, together with another young woman named Felicity, to the arena in ancient Carthage and fed them live to starving leopards, assuming that everybody, you know, in the crowd was going to cheer with glee and bloodlust, and the exact opposite of their plan is what unfolded. Because they saw Perpetua and Felicity dying, not just with peace, not just with tranquility, but with evident joy. The entire stadium fell to a hush, because nobody had ever seen anything like it before. And far from directing attention away from Christianity, people began to ask, what is this Christian faith? What makes people so strong? Because in an ancient world in which people believed in nothing except promoting themselves, they saw those ancient Christians, and they were so impressed. Their witness was powerful. They made faith attractive. And it wasn't just the ancient saints either. It happens all down through the ages. I was just reading about Jan Tiranovsky. I'm not sure if you've ever heard that name before, but I'll tell you about him. His cause is open for canonization. Jan Tiranovsky was a Polish tailor. And in the dark days before the onset of the Second World War, he risked his life and his safety to help spread the Catholic faith. He held prayer meetings in his apartment under cover of darkness, very much illegal. Understand, at the time, Poland was divided between Nazis to the west and Soviets to the east, neither of whom was neutral towards the Catholic faith. But he was bold. He was gutsy. He had caliber, he had verve. He inspired the hearts of these young people who saw him, especially one young man. His name was Karol Wojtyla. History would come to know him as Pope John Paul II. And he said, if it wasn't for Jan Tiranovsky, I never would have become a priest. The saints' sacrifice is what made the faith appealing. The faith was appealing and powerful because it was hard. Nobody ever made the Catholic faith look appealing by trying to make it look easy. It was appealing precisely because it was hard. Because everybody knows, valuable things cost. They don't come easy. Where do you find gold? Deep inside the earth. You got to dig to get it. Where do you find diamonds? Deep down the dangerous dark shaft of some diamond mine. You got to risk life and limb to get your handful of one. Where do you find pearls? Bottom of the ocean. Valuable things have a price, and that's why we should not be the slightest bit surprised when Jesus tells his apostles the price of following him. Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And if you love son or daughter more than me, you're not worthy of me. And if you don't take up your cross and follow me, you're not worthy of me. For whoever finds his life must lose it. But if you lose your life for my sake, you'll find it. Hard words. Even harder when Jesus first proclaimed them. Understand, this is the first time in the scriptures Jesus ever uses the word cross. You know, we hear the word cross and we think of a religious symbol. We think of an ornament on the top of a church. Maybe a piece of jewelry. What did those people think when they heard cross? The thought of an instrument of torture, a bloody and humiliating death. Much harder to hear when he first said it than it sounds to us now. And the only way to understand these words is to understand who says them and what the worship of God means. Only God could talk like this. Can you imagine somebody else trying to talk like this? Try to imagine this. Imagine this. You go to a job interview, and you sit down with the boss, and he says, unless you love this company more than wife or husband or son or daughter, you can't work for this company. You say, thank you very much. Where's the nearest exit? Because I want out now. Don't want to waste anybody's time. Only God could talk like this. Because God, by definition, cannot come in second. You either worship God first and above all else, or you do not worship God at all. And it's worth noting, what does the word worship mean anyway? Do you know? It's very simple. The word worship is the amalgamation of the two English words worth and ship. And the idea is that whatever you give the most worth to in this life, whatever the thing is that you value the most in all the world, that, by definition, is what you worship. And you'll find these people who say, oh, I'm a secularist, I don't worship anything. Everybody but everybody puts something first. Whatever it is, that's what you worship. And it forces a really important question. Do you worship the real God? Or do you worship an idol? Those are the only options. I knew a lady once, she was trying to get her kids ready for church, and she said, kids, get ready for church. They were playing a video game, and they wouldn't stop playing the game. And so she said, get ready for church, turn off the game, stop playing the game. And they wouldn't turn off the game. And she says, get ready for church, we're going to be late, turn off the game. And they wouldn't turn off the game. So she walks down into the room where they all are. She says, you want to know what? Just stay right where you are. Just stay there. But while you're at it, you better genuflect to that computer screen. Because you love that more than you love God. Do you worship God? Or are you an idolater? Now, the hardest line for people to accept in the words Jesus just spoke is this. Whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. People say, you know, I can't love anything in the world more than my kids, and I can't love God more than my kids. Sure you can. Absolutely you can. You want to know how? It's very easy. Just remember this. The more you love God, the more perfectly you love everybody else in the world. You love them better for putting God first, not less. And you want to know why? It's because you become like what you worship. What you worship forms you. You become like whatever you put first. So picture a man, the greatest thing in his whole life is money, right? Effectively, that's what he worships. How would you describe such a man? You might say he's greedy, you might say he's stingy, you might say he's a miser. But one thing you'll never say he's inspiring and heartwarming. Why? Because he worships a false god. And it's deformed his soul. Picture somebody who places first, above all other things in life, comfort, ease, pleasantness, and taking the easy way out. How might you describe such a person? You might say they're lazy, you might say they're a slob, you might say they're derelict of duty. One thing's for sure, you'll never say they're an inspiring example to you because they worship a false god and it has formed them, or better yet, deformed them from who they were supposed to be. Imagine somebody who loves honor and titles and all that that goes with it, first and foremost in all his life, how might you describe such a one as that? You might say he's an egomaniac. You might say he's full of himself. One thing you'll never say that guy's a role model. Why? Because he worships a false god. And that false worship has deformed his soul. But put God first, and you become like what you worship. You become filled with love, truth, sacrifice, putting others first, all the things that make love possible in the first place. And have you ever had somebody in your life and they say that they love you, right? But they're manipulative and they're conniving and scheming. This is what happens when God is not worshipped first. Of course you can put God first and love him above all else. When you realize that means you love everybody more, not less, you wouldn't want it to be any other way. I like the way C.S. Lewis once said it. He said, put first things first and you'll get second things thrown in as well. But if you try to put second things first, you'll lose everything. And the heart of the price is when Jesus says, take up your cross and follow me. Now, what does that mean? Your cross, very simply, is anything that you do at your own expense for the well-being of somebody else. That's what Jesus did on the cross. He paid a price he did not owe because we had a debt we could not pay. We imitate him by putting somebody else first at our own expense. That's the cross. And you know, people live their lives and they're told that if they're living a good life, right, to live the good life means everybody's at your service. Everybody is always doing things for you. And we've internalized that so much. We need to unlearn it all. Unlearn it. Because Jesus assures us that the reverse is the case. To discover what your heart is looking for, let go of what you're clinging to. Or as Jesus said, if you try to save your life, you'll lose it. But lose your life for my sake and that of the gospel, and you'll discover who you really are. Somebody was talking to Mother Teresa once, and she had a candid moment. She said, I love Jesus, don't get me wrong, but sometimes he can be so demanding. Absolutely true. Consider, the founder of our religion died on a cross. Yeah, he can be demanding. And our faith was built on the sacrifice of martyrs. Yes, he can be very demanding, but it's only because he made you and knows what you're capable of and loves you enough to form you to become all that you're made to be. And so I am so fond of saying, if today you hear his voice, harden not your hearts. Amen.